Welcome to the Broadband Bunch, a podcast about broadband and how it impacts all of us. Join us to learn about the state of the industry and the latest innovations and trends. Connect with the thought leaders, pioneers, and policymakers helping to shape your future through broadband. Join us on Facebook at The Broadband Bunch and see the latest episodes, news, and photos. The Broadband Bunch, as always, sponsored by ETI Software. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of The Broadband Bunch. Along with my colleague, Brad Hine, I'm Craig Corbin. Thanks so much for joining us. Broadband Bunch podcast is brought to you by Utopia Fiber, building a more connected nation. By DXTEL, creators of the Harper Broadband Marketing Library. By Calix, the cloud and software platforms to simplify businesses, excite subscribers, and grow value. By ITK, In the Know Solutions Group, process first, technology second. And by your zero-touch automation experts, ETI Software Solutions. In a time where dependence on communications in all shapes and forms has never been greater, finding an end-to-end communications systems integrator with expertise spanning everything from broadband, wireless, satellite, Wi-Fi solutions, and rural broadband networks can truly be a game changer for customers within a range of sectors. Rock Networks, headquartered in Ottawa, is just such an organization and could even be considered a Canadian version of the classic Silicon Valley startup success story, with three-year growth of more than 5,000% and ranked number one on the fastest-growing companies list in Ottawa. Our guest today is the CEO and founder of Rock Networks, a man with a career spanning three decades and roles which have taken him around the globe. Armed with a mechanical engineering degree from Memorial University and an executive MBA from the University of Toronto, he became the youngest vice president and general manager at Nortel. Top 40 under 40 honoree, he was CEO of two venture-funded startups and has now been named one of Atlantic Business Magazine's top 50 CEOs for the second year in a row. It is a pleasure to introduce the president and CEO of Rock Networks, Joe Hickey. Joe, welcome to the Broadband Bunch.
Thanks, Craig. Great to be here. Good afternoon.
Absolutely. And so excited to be able to learn more about the story of what is going on there. Just phenomenal numbers with regard to the growth that's going on. For those that are not familiar with your organization, give us the 30,000-foot overview to sort of get the conversation started.
Yeah, so Rock Networks, I originally founded quite a few years ago as a consulting firm, and it was between gigs or whatever. And so about 5.5 years ago, I decided to focus on it full time and basically start the company from scratch. So that's the Silicon Valley success story, I guess. The Canadian version is you don't do it in your garage, you do it in your living room with two dogs on either side of your laptop. So it started as a labor of love with a person of one, and about a year and a half in, I acquired a company on the east coast of Canada near Halifax called Nova Communications. And that got us to about 30 people and obviously ramped up the revenue of the company. And since that time, we've kind of been working on a product diversification beyond public safety and radio and wireless communications to add, you know, broadband communications. We now have a satellite component to our business with partnerships with SES and OneWeb for GEO and LEO type solutions, low Earth orbit, then geostationary orbit satellite solutions. Nokia is a key partner of ours in the broadband space. And now we're looking at future applications like the Internet of Things, those kind of applications that will run on these future broadband networks.
And Joe, now with all of the money that's coming into the industry, and as we're talking about broadband networks, how does that set the scene for growth? Now, we've seen it in the last many years, everything ramping up till now. How does that set the scene for growth for Rock Networks from now moving forward?
Yeah, if we go back a little bit, pre-COVID, we started the broadband piece of our business about 3 years ago, and, you know, we're out meeting with communities and kind of telling our story about how we would help communities, you know, improve their internet access in their local area. And then COVID hit, and I guess we had some visionary communities like Pictou County in Nova Scotia that were on board, but then the government really got on board because COVID really highlighted that the digital divide wasn't a crack, it was like a chasm.
Right.
And so now in the last 10 months, federal government in October of last year announced $2 billion with the Canada Infrastructure Bank for low interest loans to companies to build broadband. Then the government announced a $1.75 billion universal broadband fund that was grant money. The Ontario government, so the provincial government, sort of state level equivalent in Canada, announced a program that was $150 million. Then they upped it to $1 billion. And then in March of this year, the federal government added another $1 billion to the Universal Broadband Fund, and Ontario added $2.8 billion to their provincial grant fund. So we're poised with a large inflow of grant and low interest loan money, you know, $8 billion or more that has come into the Canadian market from government sources to really help build out the rural infrastructure in Canada. And if you look at building out this infrastructure, you know, you got a diverse geographic area, you got lower population density. And so the cost to build out these networks is obviously a lot higher than building out in an urban or even a suburban environment. Mm-hmm. So without these grant monies, these networks won't happen. And so the grants are coming in and, you know, we're now starting to see a real uptick in the opportunity. The next 5 to 7 years are going to be very hectic in terms of the amount of money that's coming into the market to build out these networks. The federal government has a goal of 100% of Canadians being connected by 2030. And in Ontario, the government has stated a goal of, which is the largest province in Canada, of having 100% of Ontarians connected by 2025. So we're at kind of the forefront of this push towards what we call community broadband networks, where we partner with the local municipalities or regional areas to actually build a network that, you know, they can have an equity participation in, helps them, you know, create local economic development opportunities, and the future is very bright.
Let's talk a little bit about, you mentioned pre-COVID for a second. Let's talk about what COVID brought to the market. There's some obvious topics there, but as far as your insight to the market and what the primary needs were, other than a broadband network for a rural community, what are those primary needs that you're going to allow now, those services and the different things that we can push to the consumers now?
Yeah, and it's not just consumer services, like everybody, you know, wants to have their applications for Zoom, Microsoft Teams, or if you're in a business, right, you would use one of those two applications. Or, you know, you have your home environment and you want Netflix. Like, those are kind of applications that will run on the broadband network. But what we see, the real potential of this next generation network enabling is a delivery of government services unlike we've ever been able to do. So what COVID showed us was everybody had to go online, and that what happened in the last year and a half would have probably happened over a 5 to 10 year span. So now you've got everybody wanting to go online, governments being able to realize that they can deliver services online. So now how do we deliver more of those services? So applications like telehealth, it's no longer over the telephone, right? People want to do virtual care on their smartphone and see their doctor over video. Those kind of applications in rural Canada simply don't exist today because the broadband infrastructure is not there. So when you think about the game changing from a government perspective, they're putting a lot of money in, but it will enable them to deliver services more efficiently to the consumers moving forward as well.
So I know in you and I have had several discussions about this now, but so COVID also brought us, like you're mentioning, the necessity to communicate remotely and communicate remotely and productively. Do you think that your average broadband subscriber then in their home can do most everything they could do before remotely as long as they're connected to a service such as one through Rock Networks?
Well, to do all of these applications, I'll give you an example of my own home, right? So my wife works in the school system. She was supporting, she helps developmentally challenged children. So she was supporting them remotely because the school system was closed. Then I have three teenagers that are doing school from home during COVID. And if we didn't have a gigabit connection, we wouldn't have been able to work, right? I wouldn't have been able to work. Mm-hmm. And even mm-hmm. sometimes when I was on Microsoft Teams calls and things like that, I get your internet connection is unstable because the uplink, like you get a gigabit downlink, but you only get a 30 megabit uplink. So
right.
when you're on these kind of symmetrical applications, all of a sudden the internet's unstable. I'm going into the application trying to turn everybody else's computer on house because I'm on a business call and everybody goes, Ed, what happened to the Wi-Fi? And so you do need these kind of connections in order to in a multi-person household, which most households are, to be able to have everybody working seamlessly or going to school or distance learning, whatever, all at the same time. And if it wasn't for the broadband connection that we have in Ottawa, I wouldn't have been able to function.
That's interesting stuff. You know, we had mentioned on a previous call, how important it is to work remotely, how important it is for all these services. So let's step back a little bit in your history. So I want to delve into what got you interested in these types of businesses. Where did you start that curiosity and that interest to get into this industry and start developing a lot of this technology?
Well, I guess in high school, I always thought about becoming a lawyer. And then an engineer from Mobile Oil showed up in grade 9 and, you know, it was career day or whatever, and talked about all the money that petroleum engineers could make and travel the world. So I decided I was going to become an engineer. But if I go back a little bit further in my life, and I tell this story because I talk about like longevity of networks and, you know, future proofness and things like that when we talk about our broadband solution. And I recall when I was like 5 or 6 years old, I came home one day from school and I walk into the house and mom was in the living room and she was talking. And I looked around, there was nobody there. And I said, Mom, who are you talking to? And she says, I'm talking to Aunt Rita. And I said, but Aunt Reed's not here. And she said, well, I'm talking to her on the telephone. So I remember when we got a telephone in my hometown in Newfoundland. And I said, oh, okay. So that's pretty interesting. So 18 years later, I joined Northern Telecom, right? And I've spent my last 30 years in the high-tech industry. And, you know, it kind of formed a basis of obviously an engineering degree. And with Nortel, they encourage continuing education. So, you know, they sponsored me to do my executive MBA and that kind of catapulted my career. Nortel was at the time around 60, 70,000 people, half of which were engineers, but engineers with an MBA were considered, I guess, a little bit more of business types. And so I was promoted into the business ranks of the company and began my kind of innovation journey, if you will. And it's stuck with me ever since. It's a great industry. Telecommunications is key to, you know, the world being a smaller place. That motivates me every day. I tell my team, I said, you know, if you can look at your job as a job, or if you have passion for what you do, then it actually doesn't feel like work. And that's the way I feel about, you know, the business that I'm in. Every day you feel that you're making a difference.
That's awesome. I always want to get to the heart of the matter and see what makes people tick, what keeps them fired up about the industry. Now, a little bit ago, you mentioned you started Rock Networks in between a few gigs, which I think is really interesting in itself. Let's talk a little bit about some of the other things that you've done. Nova Communications, talk a little bit about how that started and in your goal with Nova.
Well, so Nova was an acquisition. So mm-hmm. it was a company in Nova Scotia. I had started Rock Networks, as I mentioned, a year and a half earlier, like full time on Rock. Mm-hmm. And Nova was in the same space, like two-way radios, public safety, business process. So police, fire, emergency services type customers, as well as commercial radio, you know, security guards, concert events, festivals, those kind of events all use two-way radios or walkie-talkies when we were growing up, right? Mm-hmm. And so I won a project with a federal government agency, and I took the profits from that project and worked with the Business Development Bank of Canada to acquire Nova. It was a larger company. I was company of one, obviously, so it had to be larger. So I bought Nova, and that basically gave us a base, if you will, for being able to scale up the organization, right? Mm-hmm. A bunch of technicians, salespeople, marketing people. And then a couple of people that I had worked with in the prior company, I hired to join the team. One of them is my VP of marketing now, Nadine, and Frank Roberge. And then I hired a couple of salespeople that I had previously worked with. And we basically have been growing the company ever since. So Nova was in the same business space, and as we had a larger team, we could then start allocating resources to look at the product diversification strategy as we moved into to broadband. The other thing about Nova, in the first generation of broadband that was built in Nova Scotia, there was, broadband at the time was defined as 2 megabit down and a half a megabit up, right? So you can imagine where we are today, right? So, and it was built with a Motorola Canopy solution. A lot of the Motorola radio dealers also sold the wireless piece of the business from Motorola. And mm-hmm. Motorola later spun that off and it became Cambium Networks. But that wireless network that Nova designed and built for two customers, Seaside Wireless and Eastlink, at the time, passed 93,000 homes in Nova Scotia and was the largest rural broadband network in North America. So Nova had a history and a lineage of working on broadband. And then I joined a group called the Center of Excellence for Next Generation Networks, or CenGen. I'm on the board of directors. I've been there, a founding board member, and I've been there the last 7 years. And CenGen was all about creating, you know, what are those next generation networks going to look like? How do we use, you know, off-the-shelf hardware? How do we use open access or open source software, Kubernetes type infrastructure, et cetera?
Oh, yeah.
And so broadband obviously was a key part of those next generation networks. So I put my CenGen board experience trying to look at the architecture for these next generation networks, along with the Nova prior experience, and then partnered with Nokia, who was also a member of CenGen, and basically brought our rural broadband solution to the table.
You're listening to the Broadband Bunch podcast. Our guest today, Joe Hickey, president and CEO of Rock Networks. The Broadband Bunch podcast brought to you by Utopia Fiber, by DXTEL, by Calix, by ITK, and by ETI Software Solutions. And Joe, you mentioned earlier in the conversation the fact that Rock Networks is involved with the low Earth orbit satellite industry, the medium Earth orbit. And I know last month there was an announcement of a partnership with Intellian that will be very exciting for those that can benefit from this, because it's something that will focus on not only the land-based utilization, but a maritime component. Tell us about that. That's exciting.
Well, so we have three partnerships that we've sort of announced in the satellite space. So one is with SES, the largest satellite company in the world. They have geostationary and medium Earth orbit. So GEO and MEO, we call it. Lots of three-letter acronyms. And we announced a partnership with OneWeb out of the UK, and that's for low Earth orbit. And so we basically have all of the sky-based or space-based segment covered with SES and OneWeb. And Intellian is the ground-based terminal partner for both SES and OneWeb. So now we have a complete end-to-end communication solution working with those three companies. We're working on trials right now with the OneWeb solution. SES has some next-generation systems coming in the next 12 to 24 months. And now we're going to start looking at, once we have the connectivity piece in place, sort of like once you connect everybody with rural broadband, what are the applications that you're going to run on top of that? So things like Internet of Things, being able to, you know, remotely monitor networks anywhere in the world, or provide broadband data to a ship anywhere in the world. Those are the kind of applications that we're going to start to see now with those three partners in the satellite space.
That's exciting, given the fact that literally this will enable touching any remote location around the world, that has to open up a lot of opportunity. Talk about that, if you would.
Yeah, so I'm sure we've all heard about Starlink, right? You know, Elon Musk, and obviously they are looking at a solution as well. And then there's Telesat in Canada, so there are other LEO players. The unique thing about OneWeb is that their orbit is based on a polar orbit. So as they put up their satellites, they start covering from 90 degrees north and going south. With Starlink, they have a equatorial, basically, orbit. So they start from 0 degrees and start working up. So right now, Starlink goes up to about 50 degrees north, and you can look at it that OneWeb comes down from 90 degrees down to 50. So we think about Canada or Alaska, across the top of North America. With our OneWeb solution, we can provide a broadband data link into any community or any area with our Intellian-based terminals. So you go from, let's say, an L-band or a C-band type internet connection that maybe gives you 1 megabit or 2 megabits, and all of a sudden you can bring a 200 megabit connection down into a remote community. I mean, it's game changer nice. For these communities trying to get access to the web and other applications.
That's fantastic.
I'm curious about some of the discussion we're having now on IoT. So, you know, we've gone from telecom networks in their basics to ISPs to wireless internet service providers and rock networks connecting Canada and the rural communities. Kind of away from that, but more on an IoT scale, what are some of the things that you're seeing that communities need up and above broadband connectivity? But regarding Internet of Things, what are some of the things these communities are looking to do moving forward?
Yeah, so a lot of people talk about smart cities, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, like traffic lights, parking garages, being right. able to identify, you know, where there's a spot available that you can go in and find or whatever. And you try to talk those applications to rural Canada, they're like, Joe, we don't have any traffic lights in our community, right? So, the only parking garage is the local lot next to, you know, the Tim Hortons coffee shop or whatever, right? So, you know, so you got to think about applications for rural communities. Mm-hmm. So when you think about rural, I remember I heard on a Association of Municipalities of Ontario, which is all the communities in Ontario that get together for the conference every year. And we've done presentations to them over the last 2 years on community broadband networks. But it was a presentation by one of the mayors and from Caledon. And he said, you know, the federal government definition of broadband is 50 megabits down and 10 megabits up. But if you're operating a dairy farm and you have a automated milking production line, he said a 50 megabit connection is not sufficient. So, you know, then a joke going around at the end of the conference was even cows need gigabit connections, right? So, but that's an example of an IoT type application. And so, you know, you think about municipal waterworks or, you know, the SCADA systems that are used to develop those and moving them to an internet protocol-based system. Those are all IoT or sensor-type networks. The challenge with IoT I find today is you have to think about an application-by-application type solution for a customer. So you've got to find, you know, what is the key driver? Is it a SCADA type system? What are the connectivity needs? Mm-hmm. And it's, we've been starting to look at partners like Nokia or Tech Data or Cisco or Bell and try to figure out vertical market applications that we can bring into different segments. And it's still embryonic. I mean, there's many connected devices, so it's not like devices aren't necessarily be connected, but people seeing value in having this, you know, overarching network that tries to manage all of their sensors and all of the data points in their network. We're a little bit away from having those integrated solutions available. And I think then we'll see a massive explosion in IoT.
Yeah, we read articles every day, you know, obviously the bits and bytes, and people want to drill down into the specific use cases. And you mentioned bovine IoT, I think, in a matter of terms.
Yeah.
It's really amazing how we can create sensors that will connect to a broadband network and report information on farm animals, crops, water patterns, all these things, you know, and to do so, you need partners in this infrastructure, clearly, in your whole ecosystem. How important have partners been to you since you've started this journey?
Yeah, so we talk about the core values of Rock Networks, right? And so, you know, we value our employees, we value our customers, you know, we embrace change, reward innovation. But one of the ones that kind of gets lost sometimes is what I call we nurture partnerships. Mm-hmm. And so there's no one company that can bring a complete solution to market today, even the largest companies in the world, without partners. And so we don't design any of the products, right? We integrate products and we deliver solutions. So, but to deliver those solutions, it's more than the technology. So when we think about technology partnerships, we have companies like Nokia, SES, OneWeb, Intellian, Cisco, companies of that ilk. But then we think about go-to-market partners in terms of you got to deploy the network. So then we have customer partners like, you know, in broadband, like West Tower building towers or fiber mm-hmm. infrastructure or Plexus building fiber infrastructure. So partners like that are important. And then as we look to finance these networks, you need private equity firms. It's not just all government financing. Obviously, the amount of government funds that are coming into the market are certainly helping accelerate the rollout. But still, communities, if they're going to build their own network, are not necessarily going to raise all the funds locally. So we spend a lot of time working with private equity partners to bring community broadband solutions to the market. And then finally, we spend an inordinate amount of time at the customer level, which normally you would say it's a customer, but when we look at community broadband networks, it really is a partnership, right? We're engaging with right. communities. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's a single community like Pictou County. Other times, like a project that we just announced with the federal and Ontario government is in Northern Ontario. There's 41 municipalities, 12 of which are First Nation communities. There's 19,000 homes. It's 400 kilometers in wide by, you know, 150 kilometers high. So, you know, a very large geographic area. And you've got to spend time building relationships with the local communities, the mayors, the CAOs, presenting in the evening at council meetings. So that's a significant investment in building those partnerships. But then we show up at, you know, the Association of Municipalities of Ontario conference, and we talk about our approach to building community broadband networks, which I'll talk about in a second. And the feedback that we get is, you know, this is exactly what communities are looking for. So when we talk to communities, we don't talk about what's in it for Rock Networks. We talk about what's in it for them. Mm-hmm. And so that's the partnership model that we go to market under. So the term community broadband networks for us has kind of five attributes, if you will. One is that they're meant to be affordable and high quality. So that's why we like to do more fiber, because fiber is impervious to weather conditions, right? Mm-hmm. And from an affordability perspective, we want them to have services at a quality and a price level that urban Canadians have. The second attribute is that they're equitable. So rather than just saying we're going to serve the 60% of the community, which is typically the approach of some of the incumbents, right? They just focus on the core area of the town. Everybody at the periphery gets left behind. And so our model is 100% coverage, which aligns us with the federal government goal of delivering 100% connectivity to Canadians. The third attribute, which is maybe the most important, is that we work with the municipalities. Either the municipality is a 100% owner, like a Pictou County, or the municipality can be, you know, municipal influence, but having no equity stake, but wanting to get the network for their citizens, or it's a public-private partnership with an equity stake owned by private equity firm, Rock Networks, and the municipality. So that municipal governance and go-to-market model to ensure local delivery and local support, local zoning laws, all of those kind of things is a key part of making a community broadband network work. The fourth thing is that the network needs to be future-proof. And when we look at future-proof, we look at it in terms of both the longevity of the network and the speed that the network will ultimately deliver. And this is the challenge with wireless networks, right? You put in a wireless network today, you deliver 50/10 service, everybody comes onto the network, and then you run out of bandwidth.
Right.
So fiber is what I call, I used to call it infinite bandwidth, because as an engineer, everybody likes the word infinity, right? To infinity and beyond.
Right.
But in reality, right. Infinity doesn't really exist, right? You know, except in the universe. So as a practical concept, I'd say it has inexhaustible bandwidth. There is no one home that can exhaust the amount of bandwidth that you can put over that single strand of glass. And so, you know, it can be 100 megabits today, it can be a gigabit tomorrow, it can be 10 gigabits 2 years from now, it could, you know, 25 years from now, it could be 100 gigabit connection to that home. And all those speeds could actually be delivered today if there was a need and the applications for them. So that's one attribute of future-proof. The second attribute is the longevity of the network. And I go back to my story that I told you when I was 5 years old and got my mom talking on telephone for the first time to Aunt Reed. And that single piece of cable, copper wire at the time, obviously, that was put in our home over 40 years ago is still there. And that's the value of a fiber optic based network. When you put that network in, it's good for 30 to 50 years. And that's the second attribute that's very important for future proof, because the payback window to build these networks in rural Canada or rural America for that matter, you know, it's not a 2 year payback that you'd get if you're building something in downtown Toronto or downtown New York City. The payback is very long. So therefore the asset has to be long lived. And the closest corollary I see to that is the original telephone network, which was originally a utility, or the electrical grid, right? Which is also delivered as utility, where the electrical utility amortizes that asset over a 30 year life cycle. And so that's important in terms of future proof. And then the final thing from our perspective and what really resonated when we presented over the last 2 years to the Association of Municipalities of Ontario is that our network is built to be open access, or in the technical term, they call it host neutral or carrier neutral type model. And the thing that's important about that is if a telco builds a fiber optic network, nobody else gets access, right?
Right.
It's the telco network. So if you can imagine that there's no business case to build a connection in rural Canada today or rural America without subsidy, then the company that gets that subsidy, there's nobody else going to come behind them. So in effect, the subsidy is enabling a natural monopoly. So if that natural monopoly is to a single provider who doesn't share the network with anyone, what benefit does that create for the community?
Right.
If the natural monopoly is an open network that a local internet service provider, say Joe's ISP or Craig's ISP, right, or Brad's ISP, you start up your own little internet service provider, you sit in the local community, you walk down the street, people call you by name, and basically when they spend money with you, you're going to grow your team in that local community, and that money gets recycled. So there's an incremental uplift in terms of economic development activity in that community from keeping the telecom dollar local. And that's what we hope to enable and stimulate these local IT companies and ISPs to grow, which will put more internet technology out into rural communities. And by having these networks be broadband enabled, you know, we're starting to see, you know, rural Canada, rural America is starting to become a destination for people leaving the cities post-COVID, right? And as long as they have broadband. And so one of the key attributes when you're looking at real estate in these areas is, okay, do I have a broadband connection? And if not, people aren't going to move there. So the future of these communities is driven by their ability to move into a 21st century network. And that's what our community broadband networks brings to the table.
Yeah, that is phenomenal. And you hit the nail on the head with regard to the movement away from the cities into the areas where people can enjoy a more healthy lifestyle and still be able to take care of their business as long as they've got the connectivity. As we begin to wind down our time here, and so much yet to visit, and I do hope we have a chance down the line to visit with you again, Joe, but congratulations. Earlier in the year, I know that Rock Networks became a little bit bigger with the acquisition of Acadian Communications. And real quickly, tell us what that will mean.
So Acadian is an internet service provider in Nova Scotia, and it was a strategic acquisition in that in order to bid on the federal government Universal Broadband Fund, you had to have been an internet service provider for at least 3 years.
Okay.
So once the fund was announced, the submissions were due within 4 months. if you weren't already an ISP, you had to buy one so that you could become one. And so that was the reason for that acquisition. And so that enabled us to submit applications for our project in Northern Ontario with the community region we call H&M Coffee for community fiber infrastructure. And we were on August the 5th, the federal and provincial governments announced that they were granting $91 million to that region to build out their rural broadband network. The total project is in excess of $130 million. So the grant money obviously is very important.
Excellent.
And there's other projects that we've submitted for federal government grant money, and we're still waiting on those applications to be reviewed. So Acadian is very critical to the future success of Rock Networks.
Awesome. That is fantastic. And we can't wait to hear what the future will bring. As we begin to wind down, we always like to ask our guests what we call the back to the future question. If you could hop in the DeLorean, take yourself back X number of years, what would you whisper in your own ear years ago that would have changed the trajectory of Rock Networks?
So as I think about back to the future, I'm probably the age of the nutty professor, but I feel as young as Marty McFly. How about that? So, but it's a great question, and I'm actually going to give you two answers.
Okay.
One is, I've been saying to my team, you know, if I only knew 25 years ago what I know now, I would have been like awesome, right? You know?
Right.
And but they say, but Joe, you're awesome now. But if I think about it from a business context, right? So, be bold, be daring. I tell my team, you know, think big, act big, and you can become big. So that's something that, you know, the innovation angle always stuck with me. So I'd be whispering that, you know, never give up on your dreams. Mm-hmm. The second thing I would probably whisper to myself is, be wary, because everybody is not necessarily what they seem. And I've had a few instances in my career that, maybe did not, go as well as, you know, maybe you would have liked them to, right? Sure. Different outcomes. And so, you know, but that's part of the, you know, as people say, yeah, you got the scratches on your back like I do, you know, you live and learn. And so I think those are kind of experiential type things that you learn as you go, or learn as you grow, right? But I'd actually maybe step back maybe 35 years ago, a little bit beyond Back to the Future. And I'll tell you what I tell my kids who are 16, 17, 18. I got two older sons as well that are 28 and 30. But I have three teenagers in the house. And I give them, you know, I call it dad's three, you know, teachings, if you will, right? So I'll share those with you. So the most important teaching I tell them is, I grew up in a Catholic household. So, you know, I said, God will always be there for you, and always put your trust in God. Always, you know, and I say, don't ask for outcomes. I always tell them, ask for inputs. So say, God, please give me the wisdom, the knowledge, the fortitude, the strength, the willpower, whatever, so that I can do what I need to do. Right.
Sure.
So that's kind of dad's rule number one, if you will. The second is, think outside the box. So I'm sitting down at the dinner table about 6-8 months ago, you know, COVID time, right? So you're in the house, all five of your group together all day long. And if you're familiar with the Keurig coffee pods, right, you know, you get the little cups and you put them in and you make your coffee. So they come in a box, right? You pick them up at Costco.
Sure.
So I laid a Tim Hortons coffee box on the table and I said, what do you see? And they're like, Dad, you're going to give us another one of your stories, right? And I said, yeah. I said, well, what do you see? I see a box. I said, okay, how big is the box? Oh, it's a foot long by, you know, and they use centimeters, right? So, you know, 30 centimeters by 20 centimeters by 30, right? I said, okay. So then I turned the box on the corner and I said, now what do you see? Well, Dad, it's the same box. I said, yeah, but do you see something? Well, I see the bottom of the box. I said, oh, so you see a different perspective on the box. Okay, Dad, whatever you say, right? So then I said, what do you think is in the box? Well, Dad, obviously it's Keurig coffee pods, right? And I said, well, but imagine if you're inside the box, what would you see? And they said, well, we'd see the walls and we'd see the ceiling and we'd see the floor of the box. I said, exactly. So think about that box as any problem that you have in your life. And when you look at, if you're stuck inside the problem, you will never be able to solve the problem. So step outside the box, step outside the problem, look all around you, the world around you, to bring solutions to that problem that is the box.
Excellent.
I said, you know, that's thinking outside the box. Okay, Dad, can we go now? Right. So I said, yes, you can. Right. So, but remember, that's Dad's rule number two. And then rule number three is I tell them you have to build your resilience. And when they get upset, like my teenage daughter, if she's making eggs and they're not perfectly cooked, she gets upset. And I'm like, well, it's an egg, right? You know, like you're going to eat it. And, you know, and I said, you know, that's a small thing. Don't get upset by the small things. Because when you don't get upset, then you can manage your emotions on the small things. Then you're ready for medium-sized things. And when you handle medium-sized things, you'll be able to handle the large things. And the one thing I share with them in life, you will always encounter big things, like your parent dies. I had a brother that died. I had a son who has autism and all those challenges. Those are my personal challenges, but everybody has personal challenges. And if you're not continually building up your resilience as you move through life, you'll never be able to handle those personal challenges. So that's, if I was to whisper to my 18-year-old self, that's probably the three things I would whisper to.
Very, very sage advice. And the world would be a much better place if everyone would adhere to those three bits of advice. Final question for you as we wrap up our visit, sort of the converse of the Back to the Future. We'll ask you to pull out the crystal ball and give us what you see in the years ahead for Rock Networks.
Well, so community broadband networks for the next 5 to 7 years is obviously going to be obviously a big part of the future of the company. But if I think about the technology in general, right, and if, you know, the story I told you about when Nova originally built out in 2007, the Nova Scotia network, and 2 meg down, 0.5 meg up was broadband, right? Then it was 5 down, 1 up. Now it's 50-10. The U.S. government just passed the Senate Act for broadband, right? Mm-hmm. And broadband in the U.S. is now defined, I think it's 100, I'm not sure if it's 100 meg, 120, or is it 100 symmetrical? But, you know, pretty soon 100 symmetrical is going to be the new definition of broadband. So you're going to need fiber-based networks. And eventually it'll be gigabit, and eventually it'll be 10 gigabit. We're going to see new applications that we haven't even dreamed of yet, right? So, you know, 15 years ago, Facebook didn't exist, or, you know, Snapchat, all those applications, Netflix, et cetera, that we take for granted. And if I think, you know, things like artificial intelligence and virtual reality, I saw a presentation from a CTO at Nokia a few years ago, and he asked the audience a question. Well, why do you think with virtual reality headsets, why they tell you not to use them for more than 30 minutes at a time? And everybody's like, well, I don't know, like, you know, it's just your head starts to spin after a while. He said, precisely. Do you know why? And we're like, no. And he said, well, the speed that it delivers to that headset, you know, over a broadband connection is a few hundred megabits. And your human eye moves quicker than that 100 megabit connection can deliver. Okay. And to enable true virtual reality, you actually need a 10 gigabit connection. And then the destabilization of your eyes versus your ears and your inner ear and all that is actually stabilized.
Interesting.
And so I thought, you know, that's a, you know, a CTO, right? Thinking about things, right? So, you know, eventually we will have 10 gigabit connections to every home to enable virtual reality, artificial intelligence. So, you know, bandwidth bigger, better, faster will always be the case in telecom, right? So.
Interesting. Very interesting. Well, Brad, I think you would concur that we're going to need another visit with Joe in the very near future to continue the conversation.
Oh, I require one. Absolutely.
Reach out anytime.
Joe, this has been fantastic. We greatly appreciate that. And we also want to thank the fine sponsors again of the Broadband Bunch: Utopia Fiber, Building a More Connected Nation; DXTEL, creators of the Harper Broadband Marketing Library; Calix, the cloud and software platforms to simplify businesses, excite subscribers, and grow value; by ITK, In the Know Solutions Group, process first, technology second; and of course, ETI Software Solutions, your zero-touch automation experts. Joe, thank you again. Congratulations on all the phenomenal work being done there. We can't wait for the next time to visit.
Craig and Brad, thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your day and look forward to the podcast.
Absolutely. That'll wrap up this edition of the Broadband Bunch. On behalf of everyone here, thanks for letting us be a part of your day. We'll see you next time. So long, everyone.